bills as of January 7th.
Oh.
Because we had a special day where we could just
This meeting of the Senate Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee will come to order, and I apologize about the delay. The other hearing ran much longer than we thought. And the hearing today is to talk about public health hazards from the XL Dairy in Thief River Falls. And we first started hearing about this from some people up there, and I know this is a hot issue there, and both Senator Stumpf and Representative Olin, we appreciate your coming. And we wanted to start by having some brief testimony from the Attorney General's office, who's been working on this, and then hear from some of the residents, and then the Health Department, PCA, and the dairy as well. But I'd like to begin, if you could, Mr. Grell from the Attorney General's office, if you could start out by giving us a brief background on the situation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jeff Grell. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the State of Minnesota here on behalf of Attorney General Lori Swanson. The XL Dairy up in Thief River Falls has been an issue for the residents for the past over 2 years now. On the screen here, we've got a picture of the dairy. I'm gonna get up and try to explain some of the layout, and I know I'm going to be walking away from the microphone, but I think it'll make it at least give you a visual that you can relate to.
You have the barn here, and that was licensed back in June 2006 to hold 1,544 animal units. And an animal unit is one animal unit is any cow less than 1,000 pounds. If you get over 1,000 pounds, then it counts as 1.4 animal units. This was licensed for 1,544 animal units. You have three lagoons. This is lagoon number one. It is under the permit, it's supposed to have a straw plaster cover over the top of it. And that's basically propagated by blowing straw over top of the manure. You've got lagoon two, which was designed to hold liquid manure that ran off lagoon one. And then you have lagoon number, or basin number three. They're either basins or lagoons, or the terms are used interchangeably. That too is just supposed to hold liquid. And under the design, the liquid from lagoon three was supposed to be pumped back up into the barn to be used to flush the barns once again. Problem with the system is that although it was licensed to have a straw crossover to basin number one, that crust was not propagated initially, and it took action on the PCA's behalf to get that done. And then the permit holder also put sledge into basins two and three, which they were never designed to hold sledge. And so even when there was a crust over basin number one, there was still odor coming off of two and three, because obviously a crust on one doesn't stop the odor from two and three. So as I said, this permit was initially issued in June 2006, and in November of 2007, it was discovered that the clay basin in lagoon number one needed to be repaired. At that point in time, lagoons two and three did not exist yet. They were still going to be constructed. The dairy was informed in January of November 2006 that the clay liner was found to be cracked. January 2007, they were informed to replace to repair the liner. In 2006, there was only 3 feet of manure in basin number one. And that's an important fact because they say, well, there's 10 years of manure in basin number one. When we started operating the dairy, there was only 3 feet. They chose to, rather than repair the basin number one, they chose to stock the facility with cows and fill up basin number one with manure before they began repair efforts on it. And so by August of 2007, basin number one was full of manure. Basins number two and three were constructed and ready for use. And basin number one in August of 2007 was almost overflowing. It was to the point where it was violating freeboard. So eventually, they were supposed to have basin number one repaired by November of 2007. They did not meet that deadline. The MPCA extended that deadline to June 30th, 2008. In the spring of 2008, the residents began to experience very bad odor issues coming from the dairy. The MPCA and our office received a large number of complaints. We began to consider legal options, and we certainly informed the dairy that they needed to take care of the manure in basin number one. They had not propagated a crust over basin number one, so all of the odors were emanating from the basin freely. The residents were having
a difficult spring. So in May, our office, along with the MPCA, brought legal action against the dairy. By that time, they had begun efforts to agitate the manure in basin number one and to begin pumping out the liquids in basin number one. That made the odor issues worse. And just to give you some idea here, the state standards allow for a facility such as this to emit 30 parts per billion of hydrogen sulfide, which is the odor that manure produces, within 5 days during a 30-minute period. So that's the 30 part per billion standard. And then there's a 50 part per billion standard, which they can only exceed twice in any year. Between May 6th and October 29th of 2008, the XL Dairy exceeded the 30 part per billion standard 382 times. They're only allowed to do it twice. In that same period in 2008, they exceeded the 50 part per billion standard 191 times. They are allowed a 21-day exemption period for purposes of removing manure, and so they far exceeded any statutory exemption period they were entitled to. And as a result of that, the residents suffered a great deal during the summer of 2008. In fact, the Department of Health on June 8th, advised residents to evacuate their homes because the odors were so bad. So many of these residents, especially residents who have small children or who may have health conditions that make them more vulnerable to these odors were required to go live with relatives, live with friends, live in hotels in downtown, and seek shelter elsewhere, and were literally forced from their homes. And that situation continued throughout the summer of 2008, as I said, during that whole time period with the 382 violations of the 30 part per billion standard and 151 violations of the 50 part per billion standard. Also during that period of time, while we were in court trying to enforce our administrative permit and other conditions of that permit, XL started its own plan, which was outside of the permit. It installed aerators in basins 2 and 3, which the idea is to aerate the manure. And basically, it's a fountain of manure that they put in these basins, and it throws it up in the air. And the idea is to oxygenate the waste so that it burns off the volatile chemicals more quickly. The MPCA never approved that strategy. The dairy just went ahead and did it. They also started to put microbes into their basins during that same time period. That was not approved by the MPCA. Given the legal actions that we took, the dairy and the pressure that was put on them regulatorily, the dairy did get its basins cleaned out by the June 30th deadline, 2008. Now, you would think that the odors would go away after that, and I have to say they only cleaned out basin number one. A lot of the sludge that they had in basin number one, they put into basins two or three. But then they repaired the clay liner, and at least the clay liner was fixed, so there wasn't a groundwater contamination issue. But they didn't actually get rid of all the manure. They just relocated it. And like I said, that later caused problems because 2 and 3 never had a cover. And so after even the remediation work was done, in the period of September 15th through September 29th, just during that two-week period, the dairy exceeded the 50 part per billion standard 16 times, and they exceeded the 30 part per billion standard 37 times. And they're only allowed two per year. And that was after they cleaned it out. So the residents were under it. 2008 was not a good year for these residents. And I'm not going to – I can sit here and quote you these numbers. And yes, that's the statutory violation, the regulatory violation. But it's far more meaningful to hear what these residents went through. And I'll let them tell their story. It continued into 2009. The dairy was went through a. The MPCA decided to revoke and reissue the dairy's permit in March of 2009. In that process, the Attorney General's office, I believe Senator Stump and Representative Owen, submitted letters requesting that the MPCA simply revoke the dairy's permit without reissuance. My office advocated for revocation without reissuance, given various administrative procedures that the MPC would have to go through to to revoke without reissuance. The MPCA was in favor of a different strategy of revocation and reissuance. That's ultimately what happened. In April of 2009, the dairy was given a new permit with a one-year time period, and they were given very, very clear deadlines that they had to abide by. And by this point in time, the lagoons were already full. Now, the dairy did remove its cattle from the facility in February of 2009. So throughout the entire summer of 2009, there were no cattle in that facility, but the lagoons were still full, and 2 and 3 were still full of sludge that never should have been there in the first place. So even though there were no cattle there, between April 22nd and November 3rd of 2009, the 30 part per billion standard was exceeded 152 times. The 50 part per billion standard was exceeded 51 times. They were, and again, they're only allowed two. They were required under the new reissued permit to clean out their basins by June 12th. They did not meet that deadline. The dairy did not meet that deadline. They made no effort to attempt to meet that deadline, as far as anyone can tell. They were required to remove their feedstock. They have large piles of feed behind the dairy barns that, since there are not cattle there anymore, that feed is not being used, so it's being infested by rats and other wildlife. They were required to remove that feedstock by June 1st, 2009. They made no effort to remove that feedstock, and that feedstock is still there. They have covered it with plastic, but the rodents and such just chew through the plastic, and it's still not remediated the rodent issue that's now a problem up there. Other deadlines, there's, in addition to all of the ambient air quality violations that these residents have had to survive and deal with, there are at least 11 other violations that this dairy has committed during this two-year period. Fall of 2007, they doubled the size of their feed pad without MPCA approval. As I said, they began the aeration and microbial remediation measures that were never approved by the MPCA in June of 2008. They discharged manure contaminated water into the state waters in September of 2008. May 28, 2009, they failed to submit plans for covers on basins 2 and 3, which were required by the reissued permit of April 2009. They failed, like I said, to meet the deadline to remove feedstock. They failed to meet the deadline, the June 12th deadline, to remove manure. And on June 23rd, actually, Mr. Milner, the president of the dairy, came to the MPCA board meeting and essentially said, "Your permit is nonsense, and we're not going to abide by those deadlines. We're not going to remove manure. We'll remove some manure in the fall of 2009, but the rest of it, the big basin number one, we think it's crazy to breach the crust that we've established over that, so we're not going to do it. Maybe we'll get around to it in 2010. Of course, this did not sit very well with the MPCA. In July 2nd, 2009, they issued an administrative order requiring XL to completely empty basins 2 and 3 by July 14th. Of course, XL did not meet that deadline either. They also did not meet a July 1st deadline to install perimeter tile around a feed runoff pad. They failed to meet an August 26, 2009 deadline to install a new transfer pipe. And in any event, eventually, October 1st, 2009, the MPC brought another administrative order requiring them to remove the manure from basin number one, at least bring it down to 2 feet level, and to get all the manure out of 2 and 3. In the interim, they had removed manure from 2 and 3, the liquid manure from 2 and 3. There was sludge left in the bottom. But the administrative order that was issued in October required them to remove all the manure from 2 and 3 and to get base number 1 down to a 2-foot level. So what XL did was they emptied base number 1 down to a 2-foot level, and then they put the sludge from 2 and 3 into base number 1, which elevated it back up to a 7-foot level. And so they are still not in compliance with their permit requirements. On December 12th, the Attorney General and the MPCA brought another action in Marshall County, this time to enforce the administrative order that was issued in October, requiring them to clean out basin number 1 down to 2 feet depth. On January 11th, 2010, Judge Amdahl in Marshall County granted that order, and now the ground is frozen, so there's nothing that can be done about the manure until spring. But they at least have to get the rest of that manure out of there by by spring thaw. And, of course, the XL Dairy has appealed the reissued permit. They, as I said, they don't believe it's reasonable. They don't believe they should be required to comply with it. They have appealed it to the Court of Appeals. They've also appealed the July 2nd administrative order. They have not moved to stay the reissued permit in 2009, which is why we continue our efforts to enforce that permit. And for some reason, they continue to just blow off deadline after deadline after deadline. And I know I threw a lot of dates out there to you, and I obviously am not going to test you on it. The idea was just to give you how many times this entity has failed to follow the directives of the MPCA, has failed to abide by state law, and has thumbed their nose at the residents, and to the great frustration of both my office and the MPCA. And we're here today to sort of bring you up to speed on where we are right now. And legally, we have a March 4th hearing scheduled before the Court of Appeals to address the reissued permit in April 2009 and the July 2009 administrative order. Of course, the Attorney General's office, along with the support of the MPCA, is going to argue vigorously that the dairy received its due process and those permits should be affirmed by the Court of Appeals. But that is still pending, that appeal. So, Mr. Chair, with that, if there are questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Grell. That's sad. Senator Coring.
Mr. Chairman, are the owners of the dairy here?
They were invited. We'll find out. They've been invited to testify.
Well, is it Mr. Grell?
Yes.
Mr. Grell, did you grow up on a farm?
Yes, I did.
Do you know that even if you pump that manure pit down, it's still going to smell? There's still going to be odor no matter what.
Well, there are no cattle in this facility, and if you get the manure out of it, which they have to do under the terms of the reissued permit, it will oxygenate and the odor will dissipate over a period of time because there's nothing there to replenish the chemical process. And that's what the effort has been. Because the idea is right now is to get these basins functioning as they were designed to function if there's ever going to be cattle back in that facility. Under the reissued permit, the permit issued in April 2009, they cannot restock that facility until all the work on these basins is done. And the odors are controlled. And they're supposed to be controlled by the crust cover on basin number one and two synthetic covers on basins two and three. And they can't put the synthetic covers on basins two and three until two and three are cleaned out. And basin number one, you're right, that's where the solids are going to be. There's going to be odor there, but you know, the MPCA, every study that's ever been done on these facilities, even the dairy's own experts say, yeah, you put a straw crust on that, it's going to work. And the other problem with this facility is that it's going to mitigate the odor quite a bit. The other problem with this facility is that it uses sand bedding, and so that creates a lot of issues. Basin number one fills up a lot more quickly than it should if you're not using sand, if you're using straw. Also with sand doesn't naturally propagate a crust. It just gets scummy, and that doesn't hold down the odor.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why you have to blow straw over the top of basin number one to propagate that crust. So that's, you know, there are dairies around the state that abide by these rules quite easily. And we have gotten actually letters of support. The MPCA and my office has received supportive letters from other dairies because they don't want to be associated with this outfit because this is not a well-run facility. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that.
So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Grell, so there's no cows there now? Where are the cows at? I guess I don't understand. They just took the cows and went somewhere else, or what's going on?
This enterprise has several dairies in the Dakotas. I think they've got a dairy in the Dakotas that has over 8,000 cows in it. They've got several dairies in both Dakotas. They have at least a couple other dairies here in Minnesota. This is a relatively small facility given mm-hmm. the size of other facilities they operate. And they've had other issues. I don't know if committee members have had a chance to review the order that was issued yesterday or the notice that was issued yesterday by the MPCA, but it sets forth the MPCA's intent not to reissue a permit this year to this facility, and it lists a number of violations that have occurred at the other facilities that this enterprise operates within Minnesota. But getting rid of the cattle is no problem for these people. They can just move them to another dairy. And with the depressed milk prices that we've seen over the past year, there's not any effort to expand their herd right now. I think it's they don't have a space issue. They can.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just one other thing. I guess sometimes we almost think that manure is a bad thing. Manure is not a bad thing. And I, you know, if I had a dairy that was close to me, I'd be more than happy to take that manure on my property. That would be a good thing. I just feel like this state, and this isn't a question, this is a statement, because I've had a lot of dealings with the MPCA up in my district, and we're just regulating and people to death. Farmers, got a horse ranch. They got 25 horses and a pile of manure, and somebody complained about it. And so right away we think we got to run out there and do something about it. Every time somebody's bitching and complaining, we got to do something about it. You know, and I guess for 25 horses, you know. And so I don't know. I just think we're just getting, you know, I guess I don't know what this facility is. Maybe there is a problem, but I just feel like we're just getting out of control of controlling everybody so much and all these permits. And I dairy farmed for 15 years, so this is striking pretty close to, you know, I worked my rear end off when I was, and I know dairy farmers work hard. And I just think that, when this state is not agriculture friendly, that's not good.
Senator Stump.
That was just a statement.
Well, I think.
You want to go first?
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Grell, is there a farm family that lives on this?
That's one point that the residents have made quite frequently to our office and to the MPCA. No member of the ownership group lives on this facility. It is manned by people who are not permanent residents of even Thief River Falls or Marshall County or Pennington County. They're transient workers that live on trailers there. And in addition, there are 40 people that live within a mile and a half of this facility. 11 are children, 13 families total. And of those children that we're talking about, of the 11, there are a number of children that are children of the workers that live on that facility and within just a few feet.
So. Mr. Chair, Mr. Grell, I understand that the owners of this property then don't even live in the state of Minnesota. Is that true?
That's correct, Senator.
Okay, so Senator Coring, I think what we're looking at here is something quite different. And as co-chair or vice chair of the Senate Agriculture Committee, and Senator Coring sits on that committee with me, as does Senator Lori, we have really responsible farmers in this state, from what I've seen. And I come from a largely agricultural corner of the state. And the small and medium-sized dairy farmers that are out there are doing a great job. And I think this is one exception to the rule that lies far outside the kind of good practices in farming that we're used to seeing in our home districts. It seems to be a large, unattended farm. Its owners are living outside the state. There isn't a farm family living on the property that owns it and is responsible for it. And I'm just frankly shocked at the number of citations and the numbers of infractions of laws that have stemmed from this farming operation. Good farmers don't want this kind of practice going on in Minnesota either, because it damages their reputations. I'm really proud of the farmers in my district, and we do a great job. And Senator Coring, I know you're proud of the farmers in your area, but this one seems to be having a lot of problems that obviously are in the court system now, waiting for decisions.
And I might add, this is the only dairy or even agricultural facility, I think, in the history of the state that has been declared a public health hazard by the Minnesota Department of Health and the Center for Disease Control, or ASTR. Rita Messing will bring you up to speed on that, but that declaration was made in March when we were going through the re-permitting process. So this is, as I said, I grew up on a farm. I'm very aware of the issues that farmers face in the normal course of things, and a lot of these residents that get up and going to talk to you are farmers themselves. These aren't people that that left the Twin Cities and were going to live on a hobby farm out in the country. These are people that have lived in this community their whole life. And that's the part that really cuts them to the quick, is that this is their community. They have invested their lives here, and they have a group of outsiders that they feel is coming in and ruining it. Okay. And so.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just pinpoint or show us where the ditch would be, where the I heard you say that there was some runoff that went into the waters, public waters. And then one other caveat, if you could kind of just maybe verbally describe where the community of Thief River Falls is.
I will leave it to the MPCA to describe where the runoff occurred, because I think they're better qualified to do that than I am. I can generally give you a layout of where this is at. And Chad, if you want to help me, you can help me. This is Mr. Bonner. Thief River Falls. This is Highway 59 right here. It runs right by it. And the residents will tell you that there are people that go to work. Thief River Falls is down here. It would be way off the map, sort of.
Five miles to the south.
Yeah, so it would be down to the south, to the right-hand corner of this facility. There are residents. This is the Lowe's residence right here. That's within a couple hundred yards of the basins here. 200 yards, yeah. So Mr. Grouse, who's sitting over there in the green shirt, he lives up on a hill on the other side of Highway 59. Chad lives down here on a farm to the south. Is that east? So Highway 59 right there, I mean, you, like I said, you got 40 people that live within a mile and a half. And that's within a mile and a half, like right there. You got the Fredericksons that are here. That's Mr. Fredrickson back there with his daughter. They live right up to the north on the northern side of the section right here. So there's a lot of families. Our kids are very close. I think the residents will...
This started out as a small facility. Like I said, in June of 2006, it only had that one basin, and it was expanded to three. But the idea of the expansion was to create a water treatment facility so that the water could be recycled, which is an environmentally sound idea. It's just that these basins have never been used as they were engineered to be used. They've been used as excess storage places for the sludge. So,
is this actually in Marshall County or Pennington?
Marshall.
Is Pennington right on the other side of Highway 59? Or is it?
Pennington is just to the south, approximately 2 miles.
Okay. Yeah, it's... So,
I know we have a number of witnesses who have come all the way up and down here from there, and we would like to begin that testimony now, unless you had anything else you want to say now.
No, I don't. I'll be here
if you
for
can be around,
any
be
other questions.
Thank you. Do we want to start with Jeff and Leslie Browse? Welcome to the committee. Please, thank you for making the trip down here, and please identify yourself. And I can see when Mr. Grell said there are a lot of children living nearby, I see some of them came down here. We're glad they came to the state capitol today.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Health Committee. My name is Jeff Browse. This is my wife, Leslie, my daughter, Brooklyn, my son, Jackson, and then the little fellow making the little noise back there is our other son, Hudson. We live right across the street from XL Dairy, and we were there before there was ever a dairy there. I don't know, we could talk all day about all the problems with the dairy, but I know we only have 5 minutes here today, so I'll try to stick to the important health issues that my family has endured for years. We've been pushed into living conditions of a third world country, but we live in Minnesota. Our home was site number one for the ATSDR, Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, health consultation study in 2008. They had monitors inside of our home and outside of our home. Readings of over 225 parts per billion outside of our home, and readings of over 65 parts per billion inside of our home, with all the windows and doors closed, with my children sleeping and my pregnant wife also inside the house sleeping. 30 parts per billion is the state law, and not over 50 parts per billion twice a year on the edge of the property line of the dairy. a CAFO, a confined animal feeding operation, basically. There was over 575 violations in 2008. 575 half hour. And these are just the ones that these two little machines catch. They have one machine over there, one machine over there. There's many days the wind is blowing different ways that it won't catch it. And then in 2009, there was over 200 violations. And these violations, they're excluding the 21 days that a facility gets to be over the standard, you might say. And there was no cattle in there in the CAFO the whole year of 2009. The 21-day exemption, how can this be? Putting my family in a hazardous health condition for 21 days a year is okay? I don't think so. I think that law definitely needs to be looked at a little bit. The stress, depression, fatigue, and inability to use our property has driven me into being a different person. I used to be happy all the time, and now I feel like I'm drowning. We feel like we have no control of our life with the barn's odor trespassing on our property all the time. You know, I heard, I can't read your name here, sir, but I heard you saying about this manure and stuff. I mean, you people don't have a clue with what this is like. It is not a manure smell. It burns your eyes, your throats. You cannot be in it. And the only standard the state has is hydrogen sulfide, you know, and there's hundreds of other components and stuff in there. It is so brutal. It takes your breath away. You cannot breathe it. It goes through the walls of your home. Your clothes smell like it. It's
you just don't know until you're there. We didn't think it would ever be that bad.
We didn't have clue that it was going to be like this ever. It's just amazing. And everyone likes...
You just have to live there to see it. It's too hard to explain it. It's just...
Yeah, and I'd like you people to possibly take a look at this health consultation that the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry did in 2008. I can't believe that the facility has been declared a public health hazard by the Minnesota Department of Health and the ATSDR, and no one can do nothing about it. These agencies have spent millions of state and federal dollars, and they're just regulatory agencies with no power to do anything about it. This is wrong. The Minnesota Department of Health should have the power to stop a health hazard like this immediately. Also, the MPCA should have the emergency power to stop a bad actor and not waste millions of tax dollars and years of lost lives lost. I'm disappointed in the MPCA and other agencies' inability to resolve the health hazard in a timely manner. This has gone on for years. And the thing is XL Dairy knew the hydrogen sulfide standards before they accepted their very first permit. If they knew they could not meet these requirements of the original permit, they never should have applied for one in the first place. A permit is it shouldn't be just given to anyone. It's a privilege. Thank you, Harvey. It's a privilege, you know, and you shouldn't abuse it. The state has rules for a reason. And then also, I know this is going to kind of be off the subject a little bit, but we had a district judge do an interim order in 2008 allowing the barn to use aeration and microbes in these manure lagoons, which made an already horrible situation much worse. He is no expert in this field and should have listened to the MPCA, who said this is not in their permit and this will not work. Instead, the judge modified an existing permit and still hasn't made a final order to this day. Thank you for your time, for my family and friends. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. I do have a few ideas about possible future improvements to allow agencies to handle situations like this one a little better. I know some of these other things, if I can have another minute, they really don't have nothing to do with the health part of this, but there was workers who worked at this facility who would be willing to testify to things
that there was over 1,000 cows over their limits in there at all times. The animals were treated very cruelly, stabbed with forks, thrown out the back door to freeze to death, knocking calves on the heads with hammers, throwing them out the back door because they're not supposed to have calves at this facility. These are workers who work there who would talk about this. The pipes in the barn plug because the manager even told me, he goes, the pipes run uphill. They plug with sand like concrete. So they have a vacuum. It's called a manure vac. It's a big squeegee, and it vacuums up millions of gallons of manure in these big alleyways. And the manure gets this deep throughout the whole barn. The skid steer's tires just spin in it, pushing this vacuum. And then they go outside and pour it over the edge of these lagoons. There's dead cows floating in these lagoons because they don't want to dispose of them. They flip the cows into the lagoons. There's pictures. There will be pictures up here later of cows floating in the lagoons and stuff. There's a trailer house, 14 by 70, right 50 yards from these lagoons. These lagoons have no fences around them. Small children out there playing. These people who work there, migrant workers, and the barn charges them each $300 per cot to live in this trailer house, and they take it out of their check. They make it sound like it's a great place to work. They said, oh, starting wage is $28,000 a year to work here. They forget to tell everybody that these people work 12 hours a day, 365 days a year. Multiply it out once, a little over $7 an hour every single day, not one day off. It's crazy. I can't even believe it. The Dairy Association has written letters saying that they don't want to be affiliated with this place. I can't believe that it's even still there with all these agencies that have lawsuits against them, with the state and the federal government, and the EPA is up there doing studies. Millions of dollars have been spent on this, and the facility is still there. It's beyond me. But if you have any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. When the health department urged you to evacuate, what were your options? I mean, was that when you were pregnant? And
yes, we went to my in-laws. They live in Thief River Falls. Sorry.
My mom and dad have a small home in Thief River Falls, and she was 5, and our son was 3, and she was pregnant, and we slept on the cement floor in the basement. And we had to rent motel rooms. We couldn't go home. You can't even imagine the stink. It's not just a manure smell. It is unbelievable.
The worst part is we spent many nights sleeping in it before they told us this. I mean, watching my kids cough and kick, and then they were, like, spinning in the beds. And we just sit there and watch them. And we're like, you know. It was just terrible when they told us how bad it really was for us, you know.
Julie Jansen from Clean Water Action told us that she could get us a Jerome meter. She got it sent up to us from Arizona Instruments. We started taking our own readings, and we were getting readings of 6,000 parts per billion, which is 200 times over the legal limit. 600 parts per billion could kill an infant baby if it was left in 6,000 parts per billion for over an hour. And here we are with testers testing this. I don't know. Pretty bad.
Thank you for your testimony, Senator Stump, for Representative Owen.
Yeah, just one question, Mr. Brous, and thank you for allowing me the chance to make a comment or a statement here. The question I have is, can you explain to this committee a little exactly what you were warned or told about the possible repercussions to your children living in that area, in that situation?
What do you mean? Like what could happen to them? Or
yeah, what could happen to them if they were to stay in that situation for any length of time?
They said they didn't really tell us because they haven't done proper studies on it, but they said that it was very bad for young children, elderly people, and pregnant women with the elevations, and that we needed to evacuate from our homes immediately with levels like that.
It just was so scary. We didn't even, I mean.
And it's so brutal. I mean, we work hard every day. I own 2 different businesses myself, corporations in Thief River Falls, We have workers. We have hazardous waste licenses. I own a large salvage yard in St. Hilaire, Minnesota, and a body shop in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. I follow the rules. I don't dump paint thinner down the drains. We don't dump oil on the ground. We follow the rules. And, you know, that this facility, it's just like they don't care what the MPCA says. They don't care what the rules are. They do not care. And he said that at the June meeting. He goes, I'm not going to follow these rules. Stood right up in front of the citizens board. What puzzles me is, like, is the MPCA, are they just a scare tactic? You know, I'm frightened. I follow the rules. I do my stuff right. People come and pick up our oil. People come and pick up our mercury switches at the salvage yard. It's just amazing to me. But I know I've went way over my time. But
well, thank you. Your testimony has been very helpful to us.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you for having us.
Senator Dow.
Mr. Chair, do we know where these guys are? Where headquartered? Where they're out of? What state?
Mr. Grell would.
Their primary facility is in Veblen, South Dakota.
Is in what?
Veblen, South Dakota. I think that their corporate headquarters may be in North Dakota, but their largest facilities are in Veblen, South Dakota.
Thank you. Yeah, could we have Ken and Rachel Fredrickson? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Probably be the noisiest bunch you'll see today.
No. It's a cheerful sound.
Yes, it's a nice sound.
Hi, he said.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourselves and just go ahead with your testimony. And lean forward to the microphone so people can hear you. Maybe you can introduce your kids as well.
So. Okay. Hello, my name is Ken Fredrickson. This is my wife, Rachel. This is my oldest daughter, Brooke, my middle daughter, Riley, and my little boy, Jake. Mr. Commissioner and fellow members of the Health Committee and guests, thanks for hearing us today. We live approximately 3/8 of a mile from XL Dairy on the north side. Living next to this operation has been a nightmare for my family and me. We've been forced from our home on numerous occasions, mostly when we're expecting our third child. We're unable to use our property when we want, but the wind direction basically determines what we can do. And if we are lucky enough to get a good wind, that means that one of our neighbors must be suffering. The scariest part of all this is what are the unknown long-term effects of hydrogen sulfide, not just on me, but my children as well. During the summer of 2008, we were taking hydrogen sulfide readings with a drone meter to prove to everyone that we were just not complaining of the smell, but there was a serious concern for health here. I would come home nauseous, have trouble sleeping, have headaches, irritated eyes and throat. Our family has had many mornings of crusty eyes and headaches from exposure. We keep a journal of the disruption in our lives caused by the dairy. Most people keep a journal of fun things. You know, we've got a journal of XL Dairy things. It's not right. Things such as being forced inside on 80-degree days with no air conditioning. We constantly have people asking us how we can stand to live there. They feel sorry for us. How can this happen in this country? How many times does a facility have to be in violation before something permanent is done? Why should our family have to leave our home and our sanctuary because XL Dairy is creating a health hazard? I believe our family's rights and our rights as landowners have been violated because we can't use our property as we like. We would appreciate any assistance that you can give us in assuring that XL Dairy and future large-scale operations follow strict guidelines set forth by the state.
In the spring of 2008, I was pregnant with our little man, Jake, here. And as you've heard, this was the time when the sulfide readings were at their highest. No one was measuring them prior to that time. I did all I could for a healthy baby. I ate well, exercised, and went to my doctor appointments. But the air I breathed contaminated the baby and me. What a helpless feeling as a mom. We just pray that our kids will be healthy, and I think that every parent does that. Brooke is in first grade, and Riley will be starting school in the fall. On one of Brooke's first days of school, we woke, and the smell hit us when we opened the door. Our house is 100 feet from the end of the driveway. Some days are so bad that we have to drive our van 100 feet so she doesn't have to stand in the smell. She gets on the bus, pinching her nose. I worry what those kids will say after the door closes. Kids are cruel, and they will tease them. Again, this is something that's out of our control, and that breaks my heart. On this same day, I'll get to work, and I'll have to ask my coworkers if they smell anything, because I can smell it. It's in my nose, and I can't tell if it's on my person, and I'm embarrassed to even have to ask. There are many days like this, and it's sad that we have to keep a journal of it. We are doing all we can to keep our kids safe and give them a good life, but this is completely out of our control. To have crying kids running in the house or to tell them they can't go outside to play is heartbreaking. XL Township, the township that we live in, celebrated their 125th year this past summer. One of the people that spoke joked about the dairy and the lagoons. One of the gentlemen thanked Northwest Wind and Pump Lagoons for a beautiful day. But this would not have even happened had the MPCA not ordered them pumped. We wait for the barn to do what they say they will do, and when they don't, we wait for someone else to enforce the rules. No one can understand how much we love our property, and it's why we are here today and why we fight and why we have been at MPCA meetings and in court for years. It just seems that groups and agencies are working harder to keep the dairy in business than allowing my family to live a normal life. I'm tired of the stress and living in limbo. We wonder how long it will take and how many days in court it will take to prove this is a cycle of noncompliance. In the meantime, my family and my neighbors suffer because of this factory-style dairy, who without has no scruples of how they affect others. And if I could, I'd like to make a comment on the question Mr. Olin asked the Browses. When you asked that question, it brought me back to when we brought Jake home from the hospital. We had no air conditioning, so at night, you know, we opened the windows to keep it cool. And, you know, I remember hearing, you know, the statistic that a baby breathes at twice the rate of an adult. And so, Jake, if that smell came in during the middle of the night, he breathed it in twice as fast as we did. And I remember having dreams or thoughts that what was going on, if something were to come in that fast that I didn't wake up soon enough, that he would have, you know, what could have happened. So I that's the memory that came when your question. Thank you. I believe Brooke has a few words she wanted to say.
Brooke, welcome to the committee. Is this your first time in the state capitol?
Yeah.
Good. Thank you for coming.
Hi, my name is Brooke, and I'm 6 years old. I love to play outside on the swings, ride my bike, and four-wheeler. But if it smells from the dairy barn, I can't go outside even when it's not raining. And it makes me cry. Sometimes it's not smelling, and then it just starts, and we have to run to the house. Sometimes if we're outside too long, my eyes get crusty. When Jake was a tiny baby, I would plug his nose for him when we drove through the spell because he was too little to plug his nose. I am his big sister, and I need to protect him. On stinky days, I plug my nose when I get on the bus and the kids stare at me. Living next to the dairy barn is not fun. I should be able to go outside on any sunny day and not just when it doesn't smell. It's not fair. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Brooke, for doing that.
You're welcome.
Hope you tell your teacher you testified at the Senate this weekend, okay?
Any questions
from the committee?
Senator Marty.
Okay. Senator Higgins.
I'd like to ask if there are very many other dairies in the immediate area and whether they are all complying with the law.
There are tons of dairies in our area. You see in the paper all the time of dairies getting awards, and but none of them.
I don't know how big they are. I guess I don't know if they would be classified in the same range. I think this is the largest dairy in the immediate area.
Right, the Wavras, yes.
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
He was just saying that there's some dairies in Plummer, which is about 15, 20 miles away from us, that are about half the size. They were about in that 800-cow dairy size.
Okay. Thank you.
And was Mr. Browse, you said earlier you thought there were more, that workers were saying there are a lot more cows than they were permitted for?
Oh, yeah. There's workers that showed us the milk sheets that worked at the dairy and showed
showed us that they were milking over 2,400 cows. And they had ticket numbers for them, and it showed how many cows they were milking. I have the sheets, and they're only allowed to have 1,545 cows on the facility, and that's 1,545 animal units for cows that weigh under 1,000 pounds. None of them cows weighed under 1,000 pounds. So you take 2,400 times 1.4, you got over 3,000 animal units. That's over twice as many animal units that's allowed to be in that facility. Twice as many.
Thank you. Other questions for Senator Erickson Ropes?
Thank you very much for coming. I'm going to ask a health-related question, and because of privacy, you can choose not to answer, of course. But I notice Jake has kind of a croupy cough. Does he have that all the time, or is your family struggling with respiratory challenges more frequently than normal, according to your doctor, and any asthma, things like that?
You know, it's hard to say. It bothers me that we do. I feel that we do sometimes. Then sometimes it gets better. I can't answer, you know, point blank, yes, it's from that or no, it's not. But it sure, you match all the point or do the dots or match everything together, I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to come down here and testify.
Thank you.
Okay. Peter and Val, so... Welcome to the committee.
My name is Peter Solem. This is my wife, Valerie. And we live and work on a farm that is adjacent to the Excel Dairy near Thief River Falls. We raise registered Black Angus cattle. And I'm also a teacher in the Thief River Falls School District. Our farm has been in my family since 1892. My grandfather, also named Peter Solem, cleared and broke the land with the help of his beloved oxen, Jerry and Bright. Three generations of Solems have lived and raised families on the farm. It has been a wonderful place to raise active and healthy families. That is, until the Excel Dairy moved in. When the wind blows from that direction, we can no longer enjoy outside activities as we once did. My wife says it's like being held hostage in our home. We've been promised that the smell is going to go away so many times that we stopped believing them a long time ago. For years, I thought the main problem with the dairy was the putrid smell that our neighborhood had to put up with. I had no idea that there were real health issues that came along with the smell as well. And I had no idea that some of the health problems that I began experiencing were related to the dairy. During the summer of 2008, several monitors were placed around the dairy to record hydrogen sulfide levels. Hundreds of violations were recorded, and local newspapers wrote articles about the symptoms of high exposure on humans. These articles raised my awareness of the seriousness of the issue in relationship to my own medical condition. In 1984, I was diagnosed with Meniere's disease. Meniere's disease is an abnormality of the inner ear causing a host of symptoms, including vertigo, tinnitus, fluctuating hearing loss, and a sensation of pressure or pain in the affected ear. For many years, my symptoms had stabilized and were manageable under doctor's care. However, in the late 90s, there was a dramatic change. I began experiencing severe headaches, blurred vision, nausea, imbalance, confusion, and rubbery knees. In the fall of 1999, rubbery knees caused me to collapse in the classroom on two occasions. In October, I took a long-term leave of absence from my teaching position to seek help at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. At that time, I assumed the Meniere's disease was getting worse. After extensive testing, the doctors concluded that the new symptoms were not related to the Meniere's disease. During the summer of 2008, while haying across from the dairy, I had another terrible experience. A strong wind had been blowing the putrid smell of the lagoon in my face all afternoon. I didn't realize how bad I was until I got off the tractor and collapsed on the ground. I quickly stood up, but my rubbery knees buckled and I fell again. It took me about 2 hours to get back to normal. Following this incident, I created a timeline comparing the history of the Excel Dairy with that of my own health history. It was a match. The dairy had started at the same time I began experiencing the new symptoms, which led me to Mayo Clinic. My health dramatically improved both times the dairy was closed. Our neighborhood has held several gatherings to discuss the dairy over the last couple of years. Neighbors have shared their concerns over a variety of health issues. Two were pregnant women who were frightened over the health effects of high hydrogen sulfide levels on their unborn children. Several told stories of headaches, burning eyes, and nausea. Some even had to evacuate their homes when the stench got too severe. Everyone was upset and scared. Our son Andrew wants very much to become the fourth generation of Solems to raise a family on our farm. It is something he has dreamed of since he was a small child. But he has a wife and a small child of his own now and is legitimately concerned about exposing them to the same health hazards that led the Minnesota Department of Health to declare the facility a public health hazard. A facility that has caused so much unnecessary grief and pain should not be rewarded with a new permit, but rather be held accountable for its many illegal actions. This is a time to stand up for what we know is right. Thank you for your time and attention to this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Solem. Did you want to speak as well?
No, I'm just here to
Are there
support.
Questions from the committee? You just one clarification question. When you said you had had new symptoms in the late 90s, were you saying that there was a dairy operation there then, or it was just the symptoms in 2008 that you were related to it in the closure and so on?
Okay. Now, I've been on too many tractors without mufflers, and my hearing
okay.
is really bad. I'm sorry.
The question was whether you had mentioned you had been diagnosed in early 80s, and then you had a flare-up in the late 90s and so on. Was it that flare-up? Was there a dairy operation there then, or was it only the flare-up in 2008 and so on that you were tracking with it when
okay.
you were saying your history?
It was, I believe the dairy started in 97. It was in 1984 that I got this Meniere's disease. It was in 99 that I went to Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and I'd had symptoms for a few months prior to that. The dairy, I'm not sure what year is it closed down right now, and then, of course, it's closed down at the present when there's no dairy cattle. But at those times is when I noticed that, you know, I haven't experienced the kind of symptoms that I do when it's open. In the wintertime, it isn't as bad when it's frozen. In the spring, when you have the thaw, that's when I, you know, can really notice.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr.
Did you have one comment you wanted to add to that? If so, please go to the microphone.
Yes, I don't believe Pete actually heard you correctly on this last thing here. Yes, there was a dairy there in 1997, and it was very bad until 2003. Then that facility went bankrupt. It was just as bad as the facility is now. It was the same lagoons, and that went bankrupt in 2003. And then these guys bought the facility from Eggstar for pennies on the dollar in 05 to start it running again. And in 05, it started all over again. So, yeah, there was two different dairies. It started in 97 and ended in 03 and then started up again in 2005.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I got a question. Yeah, I got a question.
Senator Corrin.
I don't know who can answer this, but how many acres are on this site? How many acres are on this site? The farm?
Do you know the exact?
70 acres.
70?
Okay.
70 to 80 at the most. 70 acres.
And then, Mr. Chairman, usually when there's a dairy of this size, I believe when they go to get their permit, they have to go around to the adjacent farms of somewhere where they're going to have an agreement to get rid of the manure. Do they have an agreement with, or where do they get rid of the manure? I guess I probably jumped the gun in saying what I said to begin with, and I feel for you. I guess I just assume that all farmers are reasonable and responsible people, but obviously I guess I was mistaken, which shocks me. But I don't know why this just shocks. I'm shocked by the whole thing. But this manure, where does the manure go? And where this hydrogen sulfide, you know, I know manure is, I used to work when I was 16, I worked at a dairy right next to Brainerd. And if you've ever been to Brainerd, if you remember years ago, there was a dairy right on the edge of town. And every time the dairy would pump the manure lagoon, the whole town, you could smell it in the whole town. And that's just the way it was. And people accepted that. But once it was pumped, and then that was over with. But where does the manure go, and why were they not hauling it out? I guess I don't understand that.
I'm a livestock farmer, and I've been raised around manure. and you are absolutely right that manure is a wonderful, wonderful fertilizer. It's not something bad. It's very good fertilizer. And it does cause odors. And like I said in my testimony, I at first thought it was the problem was the odors, and I had dealt with odors much of my life. It wasn't until the monitors came in and we saw the level of these hydrogen sulfide emissions that I realized that there was also a health concern. Until that point, I really hadn't been active with this committee, and that's when I decided, I have to stand up for what's right, and got involved. The manure, they have a system. I don't know if I'm the best person to explain it, but it's piped out in hoses that run through culverts, and they can deliver it several miles from the facility. And they have tractors with a machine that knifes it right into the soil. And you're right, it's a wonderful fertilizer. We don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
70 acres is not a lot of room to...
No, it's not, Mr. Chairman. I realize that it's... Go ahead. I'd like to hear from this gentleman again.
I can touch base with you a little bit on this. At first, when the dairy opened in 1997... all the neighbors right around the dairy were very willing to take the manure from the facility. They burned bridges with neighbors. Then in 05, when XL Dairy took over, the very first year, they burned all the neighbors, didn't buy the corn from them, left the corn standing in the fields over the whole winter. The farmers got shafted out of hundreds of thousands of dollars on this corn with no insurance on it and stuff. Now the dairy has nowhere to pump this manure to. They're pumping it up to 5 miles away from the facility because no one wants to take their manure, not even for free. Usually you buy manure at a rate just like you buy fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
There's some very large farmers that once they've been burned once by a facility, they don't want to get burned again.
Okay.
These guys don't tend to business and don't take care of none of their bills up there. There's many farmers that have lost hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars from these guys.
Okay.
And they're just, they're not our neighbors, so they don't care. They live in South Dakota.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate your coming. Mr. Bottom, welcome to the committee, and thank you for coming down too.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chad Bottom. My wife, Julie, and I live 3/8 of a mile southeast of the dairy. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in front of the committee. The reason I'm here today is to inform you of the status of our health and well-being as it pertains to living next to XL Dairy. We have lived through years of terrible headaches, nausea, stress, and fatigue. Trying to do normal outdoor activity has become impossible as we become physically ill. As neighbors of this dairy, we had to get our own drone meter to take readings of the hydrogen sulfide levels. These readings showed values hundreds of times over the state's primary standard of H2S. In other words, we had to put our own health in jeopardy just to get the state agency's attention. The first to respond was the Minnesota Department of Health. They advised us to leave our homes if we could. We did leave our homes many times, and having to leave our homes was a very stressful and emotional time in our lives. The MPCA soon showed up with their own monitoring equipment, and the levels showed on their equipment, they pegged the meters out. They went as high as the CAMs, what they call our continual air monitors. They can't read any higher. They max out at 90 parts per billion. Many of our concern. When the dairy decided to reopen, the neighbors of the dairy petitioned the EQB board for an EAW, and we were denied because the dairy already had a permit, and it was they were not expanding their animal units. Once again, the Minnesota Department of Health, ATSDR, came in, took readings in my home also and my neighbors' homes, and they declared this facility a public health hazard. This is the first CAFO in the United States to ever be declared a public health hazard. And this is not just an emotional plea we're doing up here. We now have 2 years of data to back us up. I mean, that's 2 years of science, not just emotion. We got all laid out in front of these agencies. They know what we're dealing with. The laws of the state seem to me to protect the dairy more than the citizens and their health and well-being. The amount of time and resources that has been spent by the MPCA and the Citizens Board, the Department of Health, the AG's office, the EPA, the ATSDR, and our court system trying to get this facility to follow the rules is unbelievable. I don't know if we could ever come up with that number, but I bet it would be scary. I do realize that agriculture is a very important part of the state's economy. But when you have a permitted facility that operates above the laws of the state, something is very wrong. They have been given so many chances to correct their ways. Over 2 years with multiple notices of violation, a reissued permit, two administrative orders, all of which have been ignored. And the problem still exists, and it's going to exist until these lagoons are emptied out and this place does not have a permit to operate. I thank you for your time. Entertain any questions you may have.
Thank you, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To all of the families that have come forth with testimony today, thank you very much. I think it's important that you know that this is really your house, and we are here to serve you and to help be your voice. And I know that sometimes it's hard to come here and share stories like you've done today, so thank you for doing that. I grew up in a farming community. I today represent the Rochester area, that Mayo Clinic that you talked about, and frankly most of my colleagues probably kind of associate me with Rochester and the Mayo Clinic, but the fact of the matter is I also represent a number of smaller communities that surround Rochester, small agricultural communities. I, too, like Senator Erickson Ropes, have a number of dairy farms in my district. Dairy farms that I've visited, farmers that I've worked with, dairy farms that I'm proud of. And what you're describing here today is not normal, is not anything that I've experienced in my district or, frankly, elsewhere in Minnesota. Or in this country, I think. I do have a couple of questions. One, I'm trying to sort of get the lay of the land here. You've indicated that there continues to be a problem, although the farm is not in operation, I'm understanding. So did they leave? What's the status of the operation there? And am I understanding correctly that this farm is currently under permit that's set to expire in April of 2010?
Correct. To answer your first question, and I agree with you, this is not a normal farm. We don't think that this industry, the whole industry, is operated like this facility. This guy is in a class by his own. As far as the cattle were removed the first part of 2009, and I do believe in February they were all gone. But the problem is they left all the manure open up to the whole environment. The pits were full. That's where the smell is coming from. The H2S is emitting from the lagoons, or I like to call them cesspits.
That's good. Mr. Chair, Mr. Bottom, I guess I'm trying to understand, and maybe Senator Stump can help with this. Have they abandoned? I mean, is it a fair assessment to say that XL has abandoned the property?
Senator Lynch, I think I can address these issues. Right now, when the reissued permit came out in April 2009, and the MPCA could also address this, they were not allowed to restock that facility until they came in compliance with the permit that was issued in 2009. So have they abandoned the facility? No. Is there cattle there? No. There's no cattle there because, as we laid out earlier, they have not abided by any of the deadlines set forth in the permit that was issued in 2009, and they never moved for a stay of that permit. They've appealed the validity of that permit, which is going to be heard on March 4th, but they've blown past every deadline. So obviously they can't put cattle in there because they're not abiding by the permit that would allow them to put cattle in there. And like Mr. Bottom said, you know, the one of the major concerns under this reissued permit was to get those lagoons cleaned out, and they were supposed to be cleaned out June 12, 2009. And they have, you know, through everybody's entitled to due process, and that's the nature of our system. And I know from, you know, the standpoint of this office and from the MPCA, the court system is slow. That's the system we have. And obviously there may be other options that we can pursue, but in terms of legislative remedies. But, you know, right now there is a court order from Marshall County saying that they've got to get number one cleaned out. Technically, it's not possible to do that right now because the ground is frozen. So as we were talking about earlier, you can't knife it into the ground. You can't. This is sludge that would be handled differently than the liquid manure that is knifed directly into the ground. But it still needs to be applied, and they can't do it until the ground thaws. So, and if they're not reissued the permit in April, then obviously there's not going to be a dairy there anymore. There's going to be a bunch of buildings and some, you know, lagoons, and hopefully they'll be empty, but it's not going to be a dairy because it's not going to have a permit. So. Okay.
Senator Stump, then Senator Higgins, and Senator Coyne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, and I want to just do the same thing that Senator Lynch did and thank the residents from that area coming here. One of the things that has happened, which we don't actually appreciate or hear about as much, but the concern that has been generated on the part of the residents that live around there have made a number of very good arguments and have changed the policies in what happens in Marshall County and in other counties. And in the terms of the area up there, Marshall County didn't have any real planning and zoning kinds of regulations before the first dairy went in. And I think what has happened is that they found out that when you have a large operation like that, there needs to be some recognition of who's around it and where are the people located, And so the individuals that testified and others have made a very good impact in terms of what will happen in the future. Obviously, trying to figure out how to make this thing happen, change quicker would be. Hopefully, we'll hear about that under the MPCA, and I think things are moving. You know, I think there is a resolution in closing this thing down, because it seems like, as Mr. Brous mentioned, it seems like at every opportunity the current corporation, you know, burns bridges, and consequently that only takes so long, and people just are fed up.
Thank you. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm surprised that our administrative citations and administrative orders seem to be so toothless. I served on the Claims Committee probably sometime in the last decade, and I can remember a farmer who tiled an area that was a wetlands, and he disputed that it was more than 10 acres and that whole thing. The DNR went in and yanked up the tiles. And, you know, of course, there were lawsuits all over that, too. But whether that was right or wrong, there was an action that the state took. I live in Minneapolis. If you put mounds of trash out next to your trash can and the city sends you an order saying, clean it up, get rid of it, and you ignore it, the city comes and takes it away and charges you for it. And if you don't pay the bill, we put it on your taxes, and you pay it on your taxes. Is there no way that we can say, enough is enough, we're done with you people, and we're going to go in and clean it up, and you're going to pay? Is there nothing that our state can do like that? It certainly can be done in other jurisdictions and in other sorts of issues. Is this just too big? Is it some something? Can anybody give me any information?
I think we should be asking that of the two agencies, and Mr. Grell, I think, has already can comment on it more.
I won't give
the
speech again, but I'll hold that.
It's appropriate.
But I think Representative Olin had an idea.
It's a good point.
Well, I only have an idea to the extent that as county attorney before this era and now as a state representative, some of the administrative teeth don't always exist in rules. You pass the rules, you pass the laws, but you don't necessarily always realize that you had to black and white put in teeth and put in penalties, et cetera, in statutes. And it's not an uncommon situation, but I think that's what part of this problem is.
Senator Coring, and then we'll see.
Well, kind of on the same thing. Mr. Grell, if you could come up there again, I'd like to ask you another question.
Does anybody have any more questions for Mr. Bodden? If not, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
What about the, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Grell, what about the feed? Is it like a big silage pile that was left there? What's that, and how much is it?
And I can... Again, the MPCA, they inspect this facility regularly, and they can comment on that. The last meeting that I went to, that issue was discussed at that point in time. This was a couple months ago, so I'm sure maybe there's been a change in that situation. But at that point, although they were ordered to remove the feed, they had not yet removed the feed. They had covered it up with a plastic membrane, and were saying that that was adequate and that if they moved the feed, it would aerobically ferment and destroy the value of the feed because it had to be kept there.
So. Mr. Chairman, and I, of course, I'm not a lawyer, so I wouldn't know this, but if the judge says, okay, you're the owner, you need to remove the manure and remove the feed or else, and they don't do it, then what happens?
Well, I think
I know that's kind of a hypothetical, and I'm sorry about that.
I can tell you what has happened in this situation. I mean, we have brought, like I told you in June, the MPCA and the Attorney General's Office brought actions to enforce the permit that was in existence in 2008. As I said, everyone's entitled to due process. The judge issued an interim order, which by its nature is not appealable. You can only appeal a final order. The interim order did not support the MPCA's interpretation of the permit. It questioned whether or not a straw crust was required on Lagoon Number 1, but ordered the dairy to clean out its lagoons, and after they were cleaned out, to put a straw crust on it. The other part of that judicial order that was problematic was that even though the MPCA had opposed the use of the aerators and the microbes, the judge said, no, I think that's okay. And that was something else that my office could not appeal because it wasn't a final order. And I know from our perspective on the legal strategy in this that the tactic of using an interim order was foreclosed our right to appeal, which we would normally have. And also in this situation, the dairy, I think Mr. Browse mentioned it earlier, the dairy never questioned the validity of the CAM standards when the permit was issued. They have 30 days to appeal their permit when it's first issued. They never appealed the permit upon issuance. They waited until the MPCA came in to enforce it. And then when the MPCA came in to enforce it, they said, oh, those CAM standards aren't any good. They're unconstitutional. They're too vague. And so that was that's currently up on the appeal right now to the Court of Appeals. So those are, you know, this is a dairy that has hired very competent legal counsel. They are pushing every button they can to do what they want to do, and they have done this not only in the state of Minnesota but the state of South Dakota and the state of North Dakota and everywhere they've operated. And so that goes back to what Mr. Browse said. I think it's a very, you know, when you're looking at who you're giving the privilege to operate a dairy to in this state, I think many people have had the presumption, well, people are going to follow the rules. But this just is a case where if you don't want to follow the rules, like the representative said, you need some teeth then. And we found out that maybe we don't have enough teeth in some of this stuff. So. And it's the rare instance where it matters, and this is the rare instance.
Mr. Chairman, I would just say that I would think that this is a rarity. I don't know that we'll ever see this ever again. And, you know, I almost think that Senator Stump and I should take a drive out to where this owner is and have a chat with him and say, what's wrong with you? I can't understand what would be wrong with somebody, with anybody that with half a brain would not operate like this. It's just kind of...
We might have to take the sergeant along, too.
Yeah.
Senator Chaudhry, did you
have... Mr. Chair, I have to apologize. I have to go to a 5 o'clock meeting, and so I really wanted to stay for the PCA's testimony because I think their input on this would be really valuable. I think, but just building upon Senator Higgins' statements and Senator Coring to an extent, I think there is a... policy question involved here nonetheless. I think this is a unique situation, but I think there are definitely questions to be asked of what part of our environmental review was not, what could have been more effective in this matter. Why did it have to come to a legislative hearing or administrative orders, and certainly why it took so long to get some action, and the problem still occurs. I want to, you'll be interested in this, Senator Higgins, because in this month's issue of Bench and Bar magazine, there's a legal article on environmental review written by the former commissioner of the PCA under Arne Carlson and your former assistant. And it's a very interesting article. But I wanted to read you an excerpt, and it somewhat pertains to this. It says that, in addition, over the years, a number of categories have been created to expressly mandate or exempt projects from environmental review. regardless of localized impact or significance, and often with head-scratching results. The types of categories include feedlots, mixed-use residential and industrial commercial developments, campgrounds, highway projects, non-metallic mineral mining, ethanol plants, and sports facilities. The categories are not defined in terms of resource impacts, but rather in terms of size, density, or type of development or expansion. Successful industry and interest group lobbying has played an important role in the development of these categories over time, contributing to the sometimes inconsistent and arbitrary results. That's just one part of the article. There's a lot more that the article says, but it's an interesting read. I agree with much of it, disagree with some, but I think it's worth reading and definitely interested in at least getting on the record, even though I won't be here to hear it, the PCA's discussion on what part of our Environmental Protection Act in Minnesota could be improved for just this type of situation.
Thank you. We had one more witness from the town, Harvey Lambert, who would like to speak briefly, and I appreciate your coming. I would like to keep this moving. This has been a very long hearing for people already, and I don't know if some of you are headed north tonight yet, but I would like to keep moving. We'll have up after Mr. Lambert, we will have the Health Department and then the PCA. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lambert.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Harvey Lambert. I live 1.5 miles from XL Dairy. I'm going to put this PowerPoint in here and maybe it might load. It shows pictures of XL Dairy while I'm speaking. It might run automatic. Okay. I live 1.5 miles from XL Dairy. I have lived here for 58 years. Our family farm was in the dairy business for over 20 years, and I know what a manure odor is. At times, the odor from XL Dairy is so strong that I'm forced to stay inside my house because I can't put up with the odor outside. However, eventually the odor will come into my house too. This is the most putrid odor I've ever experienced because it's not a conventional manure odor. It is also a health hazard. I have experienced headaches, watery eyes, and my nose hurts. Over the past 2 years, the odor that my neighbors and I have experienced is overwhelming. In addition to my own health, I am very concerned about the health of my neighbors and their small children. There should be a law to protect the public against this type of health hazard. A facility like this should not be built so close to the people's homes in the first place. And this is part of a PowerPoint that I'd shown at an MPCA meeting, and probably some more slides just to show you where the neighbors live from it. That circle is a 1 mile radius from the XL Dairy. The two white squares are where the CAM locations were in 2009. And the red dots are residences. I live one of the further ones west or to the left. But this was just some violations here to begin with. These pictures were taken by the MPCA, a few here. There was a dead cow floating in the lagoon, Basin 1, this 2009. And this is probably the ear tag for the cow. These are feed stocks that should have been removed by June 1st, 2009. There's holes in the feed, and holes in the covering, and the feed has run down the covering, and that's what the piles are down below by the tires. We think it's probably rodents. It could be birds or who knows. This is liquid manure was oozing from a hose when they were pumping in July 8th of 2009. It's a relatively small amount, though. It's just foam, you know. There's a larger spill here that when they applied the manure too close to the edge of the field, that happened at same pumping. We took Jeff and I took a drive and we you stumbled across this, and I happen to have my camera with Jeff and his two young children. There you can actually see the liquid manure running into the ditch. And this is basin one that should have been emptied by June 12th, but it wasn't. It's still there July 14th. This is basin two that was part of what they were pumping out earlier, but they didn't quite empty it. They left about a foot or two of sludge in the bottom. And it still stunk because of it. This is basin three. It isn't completely emptied either. Okay, now these are more aerial photos I added later to this PowerPoint, but this is just kind of explaining them circles and stuff within it's kind of expanded upon on the first slide. So it's a, but I don't know if you want to read all that, but I can.
For time, we better just keep moving though.
Okay, there's the facility itself. You saw something like that before. This is it without any drawings on it. This is one drawing I made with circles. This is a little larger view of it. There's a river to the east there, to the right side, that flows into the town of Thief River Falls. And this is kind of the same thing again, but this one shows the names of the neighbors that live there. So it's just kind of an overview of the general area. So thank you for letting me speak today, and if there's any questions, I'd try to answer.
Thank you for showing us the pictures of it. Senator Lynch, you had a quick question?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lambert, just a quick comment. Sometimes in this job that I have, sometimes people come and talk to us or make comments about the size of government, about the role of government. And I think what you have shown us here today and members of your community have shown us perhaps an unconventional illustration of what properly applied planning and zoning and ordinances and having teeth and rules can encompass. And so while we don't often think of, we may not often have this kind of example come to mind when we're talking about size of government and role of government, I think you have done an excellent job of addressing that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And if we could start with the health department quickly. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Messing and Ms. Bremer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record and members of the committee, I'm Linda Bremer. I'm the Director of Environmental Health at the Minnesota Health Department. With me is Dr. Rita Messing, who did the health consultation that has been referenced. And I briefly just want to explain the partnership that we have with the federal government. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, the ATSDR, is part of the Federal Health and Human Services Department. They were authorized originally under the Federal Superfund to operate and investigate sites with contamination. We have had a cooperative agreement with ATSDR for around more than 20 years. So it's a federally funded activity. What happened in this case was Mr. Brous called the Commissioner of Health in frustration, said, "This is terrible out here. Can't you do anything about it?" The call got sent to me, and I talked to him about it, and it filtered down to Dr. Messing, who oversees this program. The advantage of this work is the federal agency works in partnership with the Department of Health, so they can bring resources, they can bring a national perspective that if the health department were operating on its own, we would not necessarily take advantage of. So there's added value in our partnership with ATSDR, with the feds. With that, and I know time is short here, you've been here a long time, I'll just let Rita go ahead and talk about her specific work on the health consult.
Please go ahead, Dr. Messing.
Mr. Chair, Senators, first of all, let me begin by saying hydrogen sulfide is a toxic substance, but in this case, it's also an indicator chemical. It's the only chemical that we're measuring. There are other toxic substances that are emitted from anaerobic manure degradation, and some of them are total reduced sulfur chemicals, so they just add to the toxic effect. So when we talk about levels of hydrogen sulfide, or when I talk about them, I always have in mind that I'm only measuring a portion of the toxic emissions. In response, the division director said, to a request by citizens, Minnesota Department of Health looked in 2008 at the Pollution Control Agency's data. We saw that there, for May and June of 2008, we saw there are many violations of the 30 part per billion state criterion. I'm not going to say the standard because the standard is complicated, but half-hour periods over that 30 part per billion criterion. But what and that criterion protects health. There are health effects that people will start complaining about as soon as they can smell the odor. But as you get further above 30 part per billion, people begin to complain more and more. And more and more people complain about headaches, nausea, skin irritation, eye irritation, throat irritation. As you get further up the scale towards about 90 parts per billion, which is where the PCA continuous air monitors max out and don't record any levels above that, most people will be complaining and have those symptoms. And in fact, at 100 parts per billion, so essentially when where the PCA meters max out, the American Industrial Hygiene Association has an emergency response planning guideline of 100 parts per billion, and they say that is a level where most people are going to experience health symptoms that are going to be, if they are experienced one time, because this is an emergency response guideline, so it's meant for like a spill of something. If it's a one-time experience, it's a reversible thing. But what we don't know, and what I've never been able to tell the citizens, is, well, what happens if we experience it 100 times? And in fact, the citizens had a Jerome meter, and yes, their data were unverified, but they did record levels, as they said, over 6 parts per million or 6,000 parts per billion, so way higher than that low-level emergency response planning guideline. And that's not a level that we think is safe, especially for young children or pregnant women. So when we looked at this, we asked ATSDR to come and do what they call an exposure investigation and bring their own meters that could measure levels above 90 parts per billion. And the highest levels that ATSDR measured over a single minute, but they measured levels close to 500 parts per billion and well over 200 parts per billion for extended periods of time. And these were monitors that were placed on people's property and, as Mr. Browse has said, in people's houses in a couple of instances. They were measuring levels well over the 30 part per billion standard. So these were very troubling to us. The Pollution Control Agency continuous air monitors measured between the two monitors over 100 half-hour periods in 2008 above 90 parts per billion. So that's 100 times that this planning guideline was exceeded. Based on that, we said the health department and ATSDR concluded that this is a public health hazard. We recommended that that these conditions be remediated, quickly. But in 2009, this past summer, there were still over 200 periods, half-hour periods, above that 30 part per billion level that is in Minnesota rules. There are 14 periods above 90 parts per billion, even with no cattle on the property. Now, you know, again, and the citizens have alluded to this, I can't tell them what these repeated exposures mean. This is really a chronic exposure to high levels of hydrogen sulfide because In fact, even when the levels are below 30, they could be 30, they could be 29, they could be 25. Those are still levels that people sense and are unhappy with. They're below our standard. But if you combine that constant stress of malodor with the real possibility of some toxic, direct toxic effects, it makes it worse. It may make people more sensitive. It tends to make us more concerned. And I think that's what all I have to say.
Ms. Bremer, you talked about the ties between the ATSDR and the State Health Department. I guess I'm kind of thinking for the people who came here, whether they're farmers or teachers or business owners, but their parents. I mean, we had plenty of kids around here today. And they wonder why. I mean, I think all of us are wondering why the agency says that this doesn't, they're violating this, and between the courts and the agencies and everything else, nothing happens. My question is for the health department. This is the first dairy operation or confined animal feedlot that has gotten the declaration of being a public health hazard. Does it have no, I mean, I think if I were living up there, I'd wonder why doesn't the health department thing have any impact on what's going on in the court and what's happening at PCA and so on? Is there, do you have any clout over any of that? Can you, if the PCA can't shut them down, can you do something about it?
Mr. Chair, I believe our authority doesn't go that far to we're this program in particular is not a regulatory program.
It's simply a health and recommendation.
And the if it were a restaurant, yes, we could order a cease and desist, but that's not part of our regulatory responsibilities or authorities.
So basically the State Health Department's authority in this is to tell people this is really dangerous for your health and recommend they get out of town when it's really bad.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
I think that's where people feel government isn't working right. And I'm not saying that's not meant as criticism of the health department. I'm glad you stepped in there and investigated and said it's a risk and that you instead evacuate when it's bad, but.
Mr. Chair, I also would like to point out that we work with the Pollution Control Agency, and so this was a permitted facility under their rules and regulations. And so we looked at their data that they were collecting. We were in communication with them. They knew we were out there, and so ours is just another factor. I understand the frustration and heard all the citizens testifying, but we actually are working cooperatively on the, and it's the PCA's permit that is the authority for this feedlot.
Senator Erickson-Hopes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for coming to testify. It seems frustrating to me, just like the residents here, to have heard of the continuing violations and your involvement and PCA's involvement, and yet there seems to be no, you don't have the authority for any action. So my question is, not in this particular case, because it's in the court system right now, is that correct? And as long as it's in the court system, legislature can't deal with this particular case. But in the future, when you have sufficient documentation and multiple agencies in agreement on the hazard of a particular operation, do you have any recommendations for the legislature in terms of policy about authority that you would think was appropriate for you when you're facing continuing failures and a hazard to public health? It seems to me you should have some sort of authority to step in when the public's health is at risk.
Mr. Chair, Senator Erickson-Ropes, I certainly can look into that. Sitting through this hearing today, I have the same question in my mind, and I would need to consult with the Pollution Control Agency attorneys too. I know we've gotten tied up in this. I do know my colleagues in Massachusetts have quite a bit of authority to declare changes when it comes to things like bisphenol A. The secretary in Massachusetts can just declare health hazards. The state of Minnesota does not have that ability, but I'd be certainly happy to get back to you and let you know if we have any.
I think a lot of us be interested in
Mr. that. Chair, yes, I think this committee has been more than convinced of the hazard that exists in XL Township. And frankly, XL Dairy is giving a black eye to every good dairy farmer out there. And this is an extraordinary case, and I think it seems to me that we need to consider some legislation that would give you authority to step in.
Thank you. Further questions for the Health Department? Not the PCA. Mr. Egger and Mr. Reitz. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Paul Egger. I'm Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And with me today is Mr. Galen Reitz, the Regional Division Director. And Galen oversees the feedlot program. Mr. Chair, I want to start out by thanking you for the opportunity to participate in the discussion. I think it's been a good one, and we share the committee's both concern for the neighbors and your frustration at the pace of activity with this facility. And believe me, it's a frustration that I share, and I'd like to share with you. Galen is going to walk through a few slides. We'd just like to touch on a few points that were brought up earlier. Mr. Grell did a great job of covering the status of the enforcement actions and the status of the court actions. But we just wanted to fill in a few more details. We are in court with this facility in multiple venues, both in Marshall County as well as the Court of Appeals. We recently public noticed a preliminary decision by the commissioner to deny XL Dairy's permit application, which expires in April. That's tentatively scheduled. We want to go to the board for a final decision in March of this year. So the preliminary decision is to deny that permit, meaning after April, the facility would not have a permit. We also want to talk about the reissued permit and really why we ended up with a reissued one-year permit versus the revocation. Before Mr. Reitz gets into his presentation, I just want to assure you that had revocation, if we were able to do revocation on a time frame consistent with what we were able to do with a one-year permit, that would have been the direction that I would have pursued. Unfortunately, we do have, and I think Senator Higgins raises a good point about the authorities in place at agencies and the discussion that this committee is starting today, that based on the authorities that are in place, based on the fact that we're in litigation and looking at the time frame that may be resolved, the board felt and I felt that the reissuance of a one-year permit codifying certain conditions like the cows cannot return back to the facility until they're certified in compliance by the MPCA and some very specific conditions that Mr. Reitz will touch on, that would be the quickest way to resolve this given where the situation is in the courts. And so, Mr. Chairman, again, we really do appreciate the opportunity to be here and to be part of the discussion. I would like to just have Mr. Reitz take a few moments to fill in some of the details on the discussion that you've had thus far and bring you up to speed on where things are at with this facility.
Thank you. Before Mr. Reitz begins, Senator Erickson Ropes had a quick question.
Yeah, just on the process here, you know, the conditional 1 year. Do you have a time limit? Because you had all sorts of conditional features that they had to comply with before they get their permit. Do you have some timeline in there where you double-check back and see if they're in compliance, and if they're not, then you just say, you don't get it? I mean, it seems to me if you say, here's your one-year conditional permit, you got to comply with these sets of things, and if you're non-compliant, then what? You still get your conditional permit?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reitz will cover specifically what the permit required, but the answer to your question is they were operating under an NPDES permit, which is a federal permit that Minnesota, the MPCA, has delegated to issue. That permit was issued in, I believe, 2007. and it's for a 5-year term. So they were in the middle of a permit term, and we were, as Mr. Grell pointed out, the Attorney General's Office and the MPCA in late 2008 went to Marshall County because the facility, we had ordered the facility to do certain things to address the odors. The facility refused to comply. So the next step in the administrative law process is you get a court order ordering that facility. As the court still hasn't issued a final order, as Mr. Grell said, which is ought to be diplomatic because we are in ongoing litigation in Marshall County as well. But that is frustrating for a variety of reasons. One, it doesn't resolve the situation in a timely manner. Two, it doesn't allow us to appeal if that's necessary to a higher to the Court of Appeals. And so given that situation, we looked at the options available. And one of the options available was we could revoke the permit, which was in midterm, and reissue a permit with very specific conditions. And the specific conditions had to do with the maintenance of the facility, the removal of the feedstock, the clean out of the three basins, and it included specific dates by which we could, to your point, we could measure whether they're meeting up with what we required them to do. That did a couple of things. It set the expectations very clearly for what the state expected this facility to do. And number two, it set very specific conditions that would put us in a better position to have that permit enforced. And as Mr. Grell pointed out, we'll go through in our timeline, we have two administrative orders that were subsequently issued related to noncompliance at this facility, related to that reissued permit. And the important thing that it did, Mr. Chairman and Senator Erickson-Ropes, is it included a provision, as you heard earlier, the facility depopulated the feedlot in early 2009. And so at the time that the Citizens Board, the MPCA Citizens Board, took up this matter to consider permit reissuance, we were able to codify that situation, meaning they could not bring cattle back under the reissued permit. And so while we're having the fight in the Court of Appeals with the facility, they're challenging our ability to issue that permit. The situation is that they cannot bring cattle back to that facility. If we had not reissued a permit, we may be in litigation over this very matter. Only their existing permit before the reissued permit, their 5-year permit, would be in effect, and that would allow cattle to come back to the facility. So I know this is there are a lot of moving parts to this, but that was a really crucial thing. From my perspective, and I unfortunately do have to be a little bit careful because we are in ongoing litigation in a couple of venues on how much detail I go into. But the bottom line for me is, what is the quickest way we can resolve the environmental and the human health problem? And unfortunately, revocation alone, and not revocation reissuance, appeared that it would take longer. And so it was a judgment call. But that was the intent of that action. With that, Mr. Chair, Mr. Reitz does have just a few slides. You also have a handout in front of you which does contain a timeline and a summary of the events that have taken place over the last, since late 2008. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn over to Mr. Reitz.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Reitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm going to abbreviate what I would have gone through because I think we've already covered a lot about the facility. Just a quick map that gives you a sense of where this is locationally. In Marshall County, Thief River Falls, just south of the dairy. You've seen photos of the dairy, so I'm not gonna go through this. This gives you a sense looking from Basin 1 to the south, and you can see the other two basins. These three basins hold 33 million gallons of manure, so it's a large volume that we're dealing with here. This is the third basin, and you can see that most of the solids get settled out in the first basin. By the third basin, it's a much more liquid manure. I wanted to use this slide just to highlight where the residences are. The circle is 1 mile from the facility. There's 11 residences within that 1-mile radius, and I think this is really important to recognize as we move into the next piece, which is about the hydrogen sulfide measurements that we've taken. In 2007, we received a number of complaints and concerns from neighbors, and so in 2008, May of 2008, we installed two monitors at the facility to do measurements, and I guess I'm just going to highlight a couple things. If you look at this line, this is our 30 part per billion standard. This is the 50 part per billion standard, so you can see where the measurements are above that. I think what is probably important to recognize is, you know, it's down here where you see nuisance odors, and this is the level when we talk about that. As you get up here is where you start having the concerns about health risks above that 30 parts per billion. So during the we monitor when the weather's above 32 degrees below that, we start losing data. So our continuous air monitors are out there from May through November. Here's a sense of what the data looks like from 2009. In 2009, the basins started full. And then in early July, they pumped them out, and you can actually see a reduction after the pump out of basins 2 and 3 occurred. We had some rain in September, which re-wet some of the basins, and so the odors came back up. Again, in October, the peak is when they were pumping out basin 1. So you can kind of look through this and see. This year was a bit better, but certainly not acceptable. This is just a summary of the exceedances from 2008 and 2009. 478 exceedances that are over 400 exceedances above the 30 parts per billion, and over 200 in 2009 above the 30 parts per billion. So certainly significant exceedances, and obviously this was what raised concern for us. So what I'd like to do now is just quickly walk through some of the actions that we've taken. And so we started monitoring in May of 2008. June 11th, 2008, we directed Excel Dairy to apply straw to the manure basins to provide containment for the hydrogen sulfide emissions. Straw helps develop a biosolids cover. The biosolids cover does two things. As the gas comes up, it helps trap the gas in the basin, but it also, as it comes up through those biosolids, it actually, the gas gets broken down by microbes. So it helps actually get some reductions. Needless to say, at this point, the dairy did not comply with our directive. In late June of 2008, as has been mentioned, the PCA and the Attorney General filed action in Marshall County District Court. In July, the Marshall County District Court issued the interim order, which required straw cover on Basin 1, but allowed the dairy to move forward with aeration of Basin 2 and 3, which we did not agree with. Then in October of 2008, there was a review hearing. The judge wanted to hear back how well did the efforts work, and we went back asking for additional measures, covers on all three basins, and that's the ruling that we're still waiting for. The district court still hasn't made a decision on that request. Throughout this time period,
Mr. Chairman, one item that I'd just like to point out, you just heard from the health department about the declaration of this facility being a public health threat, well, along with ATSDR. It's at this October hearing that information was also introduced in the Marshall County proceeding, and as Mr. Reitz just stated, and Mr. Grell pointed out earlier, we still don't have a final order in that action.
So even despite, in other words, the court had the PCA violations?
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
And then in October, they heard from the health department stuff was submitted to the court as well. And how is this typical? I mean, when PCA goes to court on things, does it always take that long?
Mr. Chairman, I can just tell you from my experience, Mr. Reitz has been at the agency longer than I. It doesn't appear typical to me. It's certainly not what I've experienced in my 8 years at the agency. And Mr. Gorell is probably better situated than I to comment on from the Attorney General's office perspective.
Go ahead and finish up the presentation. Yeah, thanks.
So throughout this time period, we also were trying to work with the dairy to identify technical solutions that would eliminate the hydrogen sulfide odor problems from the manure basins, but these efforts all proved unsuccessful. So then that brings us to last year, summer of 2009 or spring. On April 28th, the Citizens Board revoked Excel Dairy's existing permit and reissued them the one-year permit that required specifically that all manure be removed from the basins by June 12th, that a pyosolids cover be maintained on basin one, that installation of an impermeable cover and collection of gas on basin two, and then a permeable cover, synthetic cover on basin three. We required operation management plans for the facility and other number of improvements such as removing the silage piles, and all of those requirements had to be met, and that we approved them. Actually, the PCA board would have to approve them before cows could return to the facility. Of course, Excel Dairy has appealed that reissued permit, and in fact, that'll be in front of the oral arguments will be heard in front of the Court of Appeals on March 4th, coming up here very soon. But I think the good thing about what happened with the revoke and then the reissued permit is that reissued permit with all those strict requirements went into place, whereas if we'd done a strict revocation, their existing permit would have been in place. They could have brought cows back immediately and started operations again, and we wouldn't have had any corrective action requirements that would have been required until it had completely gone through the appeal process. So we believe that this was a shorter process.
Mr. Reitz, you mentioned a minute ago, you said you were trying to work with the dairy on trying to clean up the operation. I'm just curious how those meetings go. It sounds like he's laughing in your face. Everything you say, he's just ignoring it.
Mr. Chairman, actually, as we would have discussions, I guess, you know, this ends up being part of the frustrating part about any kind of negotiations is, you know, you can have discussions. They can talk about what they may or may not be willing to do. But when it really comes to will they take the action and will they sign a stipulation agreement, which then you take to a court of law who make that a court-ordered agreement, and we never got to the point of being able to put in writing what they would or, you know, what they were really willing to do. So that's why I say, you know, we never got to the point of a settlement or an agreement on what could happen, so, or what they would be willing to do.
Senator Stump?
I'm just curious. This is a fascinating expose of how rules and regulations and laws are implemented and what happens. Does this happen with other kinds of enforcement issues? Like, let's say if there's a leak in a pipeline someplace, and it's a small leak. It's not flowing, but you know it's there, and could that pipeline owner with high priced attorneys and good resources delay fixing that and not, or is there a different set of rules and regulations for that versus, let's say, feedlots?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, I think in the majority of cases, you know, once you've identified, you know, we start with a letter of warning, notices of violation. We might do an administrative penalty order. We might do a stipulation agreement. And as we step up through those levels, usually at some point there's reached agreement on both what the solution is, what a penalty may be, and then it's put in writing, you agree to it, and you move forward. And in the majority of cases, the regulated parties find a point where they agree that this is what needs to be done. And in a few cases, we end up going into litigation on issues, but that's luckily that's the minority. But it's basically the same compliance and enforcement system that we use throughout the agency for the various programs.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman, with the expense that the different agencies, and there's multiple agencies involved here, with the expense that you've gone through and the time and just all the resources that you've put into this, is there a way to recoup this from the person who's corporation or whoever who's in negligent?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, you know, typically as you move through those levels of enforcement and reach some agreement, penalties are defined. So while we don't necessarily recoup costs, at least the state has some penalty that comes into the system for that. But when you can't get to the point of a settlement, so that they agree to some level of penalties, which would be the situation in this case, then for us to collect penalties, likely in this situation, we would actually have to go back to Marshall County District Court and ask for them to identify what penalties would be. So,
well, I'm not an attorney, but wouldn't it be important for the state to try to recoup the resources? I mean, we're looking at a $1.2 billion deficit in the current year and a large deficit in the next biennium. And, you know, just from sitting here and listening and kind of observing and reading what's been taking place, I wouldn't doubt if we've got $1 million or more spent out there that should not have occurred in the sense, I mean, I could understand, you know, a few objections up front, you know, maybe a little disagreement or something, but this seems to be outright usury of how you can avoid living up to the regulations that the legislature, the public, and you as an agency have put in place.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to Senator Stumpf, and actually I'll anticipate the question that we're going to receive at the end, which is policy recommendations. Senator Stumpf, you raise a fantastic point, and I think it's one that we certainly want to help you work through understanding what that may look like in terms of policy changes. And you're talking about a very specific one, which is recovery of costs, recouping of costs associated with these actions. I don't know the answer to it, but I know that we can bring a lot to the table in terms of our experiences with this facility. And you know, let me reiterate something that you heard earlier from a variety of witnesses and from members of the committee. This is not a typical dairy. This is not a typical situation. And so I think, you know, that's important for us to keep in mind. But I think we can lay out for the committee, as you're thinking about what works in the system and what doesn't, the whole process of administrative law and how it's applied, how it's enforced, the role of the court system, the ability of agencies, once noncompliance is identified, to really bring those issues to closure. And there are important public policy issues for you all to consider in terms of due process and the appeals and how that might work. But I think the fact that you're having the hearing today, that you've given the neighbors in the area an opportunity to bring their story here, and that you've asked the questions of the agencies on what happened in this case, you're right. It's taken too long. We need to figure out if there are changes that you all should be considering. And I don't know the answers to those questions other than, you know, we have a commitment to work with you to help, you know, bring to light what has happened through this individual situation, and maybe that'll highlight some areas where you may want to focus as you move forward.
I know a couple others here have questions here, and I do too, but I want to say that when the people sitting behind you who have been suffering all this, yeah. when they, if you don't collect the costs, they're paying for it, as are all of our constituents, and I can guarantee you there are probably 201 legislators who would be angry if we don't get the money out of them in court, and I will urge you to go to court and sue them for every penny you spent on it. And Mr. Grell is there, and if he wants to add comment, I will encourage him to come up the table as well, because I think there are going to be a lot of angry people if they get off the hook and the state ends up picking up the tab, because that's the people who have been hurt being the ones who pay it in the end.
Well, I just wanted to I am not an expert under the MPCA regulations, and I'm not an environmental lawyer, but I can assure you that in the Attorney General's office, we sue out, and Representative Olin and I were just talking earlier about some of these debt relief cases. You know, anytime our office has the ability to recoup our litigation costs, our fees, get penalties, we certainly do everything we in our power to get those back. And much like Mr. Egger was describing, or Commissioner Egger was, you know, most of the time people come to the table and they agree, and they not only agree to restitute the citizens, but they also agree to the penalties and the fees and the costs and everything else. And then on those rare instances when you do have to go to court, no matter what the AG's office is doing, you know, we seek the full amount of our ability under the law to recoup the taxpayers' costs, and we're usually pretty lucky in doing that. Not lucky, but successful. So that's something that is always a top priority in our office, and there were legislative changes last year to make sure that all that money got returned to the general fund, and that's, you know, a regular part of my everyday job. So I can assure you.
A lot of support around here for doing this.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I agree with you. Penalties are an extremely important aspect of this case, and where we are in the process is, first of all, concern about the environmental and health issues associated with the facility and bringing closure to the problems that this dairy has caused. And at the once we move on from addressing the immediate environmental problems, then the issue and the focus and attention from our perspective shifts to what are the appropriate penalties and how do we go about that. And I'm confident that the Attorney General's office and the Pollution Control Agency will be able to work very well together as we have all along and ensuring that we're taking the responsible action. Mr. Chairman, there are a few more points to bring the committee up to speed.
On this point, I think both these two wanted to have quickly. So,
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
We're way over time, but yes.
This is going to be a rather quick question because you don't have to give a long answer. But what I'm seeing is a glitch, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. Right now you have a procedure in place. There's nothing necessarily wrong with the procedure where you do try to sit down with the other side and work something out, right?
Mr. Chairman, correct.
Okay. Then the next question is there any mechanism whatsoever if the other person basically stonewalls you and doesn't do anything, or is it just a fall safe when you get into that procedure?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is, just as you saw in this case, you first try as the regulatory mm-hmm. agency, the MPC in this case, to bring the facility into meeting the requirements of their permit, to bringing them into compliance with their environmental requirements. In the rare instance, and this being an obvious example, that they choose not to, they fail to respond and to follow the MPCA's orders to be in compliance, the next step is bringing an action in district court. And that's where we ended up here.
Right.
And again, unfortunately, we still don't have an order from late 2008 from that venue.
And unfortunately, that's not necessarily your fault. That's the way the system operates. But there distinctly is a stonewalling process that can easily be done by somebody that wants to be whatever, belligerent, doesn't want to cooperate, and just has no respect for your rules whatsoever or for the rules of the state of Minnesota.
Senator Winston, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Eager, Mr. Reitz, just a process question. You indicated that the PCA Citizens Board is to make a decision on March 23rd, that there's a hearing on March 4th.
Mr. Chairman, the reissued one-year permit, the argument is in the Court of Appeals is March 4th, so we'll be in court. The dairy is challenging the issuance of that permit, so oral arguments have been scheduled. As Mr. Grell pointed out earlier, that's scheduled for March 4th. The MPCA Citizens Board, which I chair, has the final authority to what I the way it works. The Citizens Board is actually it's quasi-judicial. It's different than the way committees here operate. And there are findings of fact and conclusions of law, and there's a very formal process for developing the record. And so what happens is the commissioner develops a preliminary, makes a preliminary determination on what to do with the permit in this case. And my preliminary determination is to deny the renewal of that permit. The Citizens Board has reserved the right to make the final decision on that, and that will occur on March 23rd. And the current one-year permit expires in April.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Eager, thank you for that. I'm trying to get to the point of if citizens wish to comment on this, who do they comment to and what's the deadline? How do they do that?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Reitz can share with the committee the public comment process. That the fact sheet that that describes the preliminary decision to deny the permit is on public notice right now, and Mr. Reitz can share how the comment process works.
And I think the people in the audience are very aware of that and have been commenting.
And Mr. Chair, there's also an opportunity to testify at the March board meeting as well.
Senator Higgins, quickly, and then we'd like to have Mr. Reitz finish.
I will. Commissioner, in your steps of what you you were doing, the piece that's totally missing is the mitigation of the hazard. And you've got the health department looking at the health effects of all these fine people who are here and their children and the environment. And and there was nothing ever said, or maybe I missed it, but I don't think I did, saying that there was a place and a time where you go fix the problem. You drain the what do you call it, and the you take care of it yourself. And that's my frustration, I think, in listening to our agency's response to this.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, in the permit that we issued, the one-year permit, the requirement to have the crust on the basins, to clean them out completely so that these covers could be applied to basin 2 and 3, collection of gas from basin 2, and then and ultimately they talked about having collection of gas for 2 and 3, that would have mitigated it. We firmly believe.
They didn't do it, did they?
They did not do it, and that's why there are no cows there today, and it's not operating today. Until they meet those requirements, our board is not going to approve them to operate.
But, Mr. Chair and Mr. Reitz, those cows were gone before you did the revoke and reissuance. Isn't that right? So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, that is correct. And that also, they removed the cows, and they believe that was an act of goodwill. To do that, but that also allowed us to have the leverage of what we did through the permit of not allowing cows to come back.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chair, just my last question is, have either of you visited their other Minnesota facilities?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, they only have one other Minnesota facility at this time. They have had and have been involved with other facilities at various times, but right now they only have one other one. We've done inspections there, and actually other violations at other facilities are part of our decision related to permit reissuance, whether it'll be denied or whether it will be considered to be reissued.
At the other facility? Mr. Chair.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, there is a clause in statute that we can consider in making a decision on issuing them their permit that allows us to look at their compliance history at this facility, at other facilities they've been involved with, and facilities outside of the state. And so that we actually have looked at their facilities. We've talked to South Dakota. We've talked to North Dakota. We've looked at their past history here, and that's outlined in this intent to deny.
Thank you.
Please continue then.
I will make this very, very quick and just sum it up that this summer we did three notices of violation related to the new permit that we issued. We did the two administrative orders directing them to pump out the basins, and we ended up in December going back to Marshall County District Court to ask the court to enforce that the October administrative order. It was in front of a different judge than the previous year, and we did get a positive ruling in that case. And then I guess I'll just briefly mention that we've public noticed our intent to deny Excel Dairy's application for reissuance of their permit. It went on public notice yesterday. The permit would be up April 28th. We'll hear it at the March 23rd meeting. Public comments, it's out for public comment now. We will accept public comment through February 19th, at which time we'll compile all those comments, prepare information for our board, and then it'll be heard March 23rd. That is the opportunity for the neighbors and other interested public to come and testify in front of our board, at which point they'll make a decision.
Thank you. I had a couple more questions, one of which is one of the neighbors mentioned that they had seen from the people there that they were milking 2,400 cows, and I'm told that his calculation is about 3,000 animal units, which is about twice what is permitted. Isn't that part of the permit, too? Because I didn't see anything referenced in there about exceeding that, and I don't know if there's anything about the storage of the feed on site and so on. Has the PCA investigated that? Because it sounds like if they're twice the capacity they're supposed to have, that would be a major factor in making it worse.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, actually that is identified in this intent. We actually ended up looking at it less from the what we had heard from various rumors of people that work there, because we could not substantiate those. But the dairy, in one of their plans, actually submitted information that would suggest that they had too many cows, or that the cows weren't 1,000 pounds, that they were closer to 1,400 pounds per cow. And so that's what we are basing ours on. In reference here, as far as number of animal units, it's based on what the dairy actually submitted to us. And we talked about, during the course of this whole process, we talked to the county attorney, we talked about how we would go out and actually go on site and try and count the cows. And then we got this information, and so we decided that was going to be what we would rely on, and then the cows were removed before we actually tried to do a count.
Couldn't you simply, as condition of the permit, when you've got some sense that somebody's violating, can't you just go on to the property and count?
Mr. Chairman, that's actually a more difficult task to count 1,500 cows than you might imagine. And so we discussed it at length and decided that we were probably better off focusing our efforts in other areas as far as the time and effort it would take as and what it would contribute to the case.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, if you have in front of you, I believe we had distributed the fact sheet on the preliminary decision to deny the permit application. The discussion of the animal units is on page 6 of that document.
Okay, thank you. Two final ones, one of which is the issue of needing emergency powers. It seems to me this is a PCA tends to be dealing with longer-term things, damage to the environment. We've got families here who are concerned about their kids' health, and suggestion that they immediately evacuate, I think we have to pursue with the health department whether they need emergency authority for that. It would be helpful if you could let us know. I'm sure Senator Chaudhry's committee would be interested as well in knowing whether you feel you need emergency powers, because this isn't what you'd call an acceptable outcome for anyone. But the final one is, what happens, you expect the agency board will deny the renewal and they will be out of business in Minnesota. How is the manure going to get cleaned up then? Is that going to be Superfund? I mean, will you step in, clean it up, bill the owner? How do you do that? What's next? Because I think that's
Mr. Chairman, I'll ask Mr. Reitz to step in, but Superfund is certainly an option that we'll consider. Obviously, when you have a party that a responsible party that you have identified, responsible in terms of the regulatory meaning of that, meaning they're responsible for the either a permitted facility or a spill of some kind. Obviously, when you have identified a responsible party, the first choice is that you somehow compel that individual to take the necessary action to clean up. But obviously, we'll consider any and all tools at our disposal. Mr. Chairman, you mentioned Superfund. That's certainly an option that we would consider if this facility is denied their permit, which the preliminary decision is to do just that, and the basins need to be cleaned out. So we'll consider all options.
Well, for the sake of the health of people, I hope that happens immediately in after April.
Mr. Chair, actually, the court order that we are waiting for the signature on the order, but that requires them. There's about 7 feet of manure still in Basin 1, and that court order says that it has to be cleaned out in the spring no later than June 15th. So the manure will be removed.
Just the court order you're referring to is that most recent one that Judge Ondal just did about 2 weeks ago or whatever?
Correct.
The question I had, and it's strictly background on Superfund. Now, as I understand the Superfund, worst case scenario, you'd end up, if the Superfund had to be used, you could assess that back to that property, right? The costs of doing it could be assessed back to the property.
The premise of Superfund, Mr. Chairman, is that the state takes action first and decides cost recovery at a later date. So the answer to your question is yes.
So it works the way it should work. They clean it up and then they can bill them, assuming there's somebody who's...
So if they do nothing, there is a way to get back to them.
Any further questions for the agency? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I'll have Mr. Browse in just a second, but I wanted to ask, I've been told Mr. Milner's not in the room, but if anybody is here for the XL Dairy, you have your day in committee here. We had told them, we invited them, asked them to come. They have, apparently they're not here. And with that, Mr. Browse, if you have a real quick comment, you're welcome to come back up.
I guess kind of one of my main concerns is in 1997, I was 27 years old. And that's when this started. I'll be 40 years old this spring. This is the second time around we've lived through this nightmare. And, you know, they come up here and they talk about the covers and stuff, you know, and what we're worried about is, you know, can I live through this again? Right now my 5 and 7 year old share a 12-foot by 12-foot bedroom, and we've got an 11-month-old baby sleeping in our bedroom with us. We've been planning on building a house for about 15 years, but we don't dare because we know what we live in, and it's pretty hard to go to the bank and get a $200,000 loan and then pay a $1,200 a month house payment every month, knowing that you're going home to a hazardous situation. And I don't know if there's this probably ain't the right committee to talk to or whatever, but I don't know if there's any way that this facility, it's the first owner's was bad, the second owner's was bad. I don't think the facility is set up properly. Like I said before, the pipes are plugged inside the barns. I don't know if there's any way that I don't believe this facility should ever be reopened. They shouldn't be able to put facilities 200 yards from people's drinking wells and have lagoons as far as you can see, 22 feet deep, full of manure, 200 yards from somebody's well and their home. That should not be done. And I hope and pray that no matter what, if this barn thinks they're going to come back and try to slam some covers on here next summer and try to make things, I don't think they should ever be able to have a barn there ever again.
Mr. Browse, you and your neighbors have gone through a lot, and I think the state hasn't lived up to its responsibility to protect your health. And I think we have to make sure we find a way to have this happen as soon as possible so you can decide to go ahead and build the home you want to build. And I think for all of your health, I thank you for taking the long drive down here. I thank you for having to do it. You shouldn't have to be the ones here who are bringing the state to attention to make sure we take care of the damage that's being done to your health. And let's just say that we've got to change that, and we're going to work hard to make it happen. And thank you for coming. Representative Olin,
as long as we're on thank yous, I would just like to thank you, you as chairman of this committee, for being willing to allow this hearing to take place and for a source to be used to try to get this mess straightened out. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, thank you all for coming, and this meeting is adjourned.
It seems strange that we can't just do the job and assess it back.